Welcome back to The Wrong Opinion Presents, a movie podcast. This week we are talking about two movies with vastly different budgets. We're talking about Dune Part 2 and The Ballad of Davy Crockett. We're going to start off talking about The Ballad of Davy Crockett. I had a friend who worked on this movie, which is why I heard of it, why I went. Small budget movie, but it does not at all seem like it. So if you haven't heard of it, it's of course about Davy Crockett, starring William Moseley, who played the older kid Peter in The Chronicles of Narnia. Now it follows when Davy is coming back from DC to his hometown of Middle Tennessee. I'm in Middle Tennessee, which is why it was kind of a bigger movie here than I assume was elsewhere. In the meantime, he gets injured. His wife is sick. That's why he came home early. He gets injured on his way home, and his children have to take care of the ailing wife and themselves. While waiting for Davy, the children take a pelt out of a trap to eat the meat, and the trapper finds them, wants to punish them. Davy has to come home as quick as he can, race against the clock that he doesn't know is ticking, and eventually he saves the kids. In the process, he gets saved by a couple Native Americans, and they help in the final battle. So basically the story is about Davy Crockett's transition from supporting Andrew Jackson's Indian Removal Act to being against it because these people aren't savages. And I'll get into a couple cool quotes about that in a minute here. Now, there were two fairly big names. There was William Moseley. I'm going to talk about him at depth in a second. And then Colm Meaney. Now, Colm, first of all, he was on fire in this movie. He was really, really good. Definitely the best actor in the movie and stole the show. Just absolutely terrifying as the main villain across from the kids. I think sometimes it's easy to play a villain with kids because you're so intimidating to them. This took it to a different level, and he was legitimately great in this role. Now, the reason I say that this movie doesn't seem like a low-budget movie, there's kind of three things that you need to have a professional movie. You need good sound. Like, if you have bad sound, then your movie's just, it doesn't matter how, that's the number one crux. It's going to look bad. It's going to seem bad if you have bad sound. Look at Birdemic. There's a lot of things wrong with the movie Birdemic, but the sound is the thing that clearly makes it the least professional. Number two is resolution, which isn't much of an issue anymore. You have iPhones with good resolution. Number three is lighting. Not necessarily can you see the characters. Is it well lit? But there's just a sense of professionalism that comes with good lighting. This movie was lit really, really well. I talked about, 2 weeks ago with Josh on Wakanda Forever about how I hate poorly lit night scenes. And it happens sometimes in big movies. This movie had a great lit night scene where it looks like it's the moon, you know? You have the white light coming from one angle. It looks like it's the moon. You can see everything, but you can tell it's night. That's what I want. I want to take a second on William Moseley. He should have been this generation's Heath Ledger. He is a great presence on film, and that's a skill. Being not necessarily attractive, but attracting the camera to stare at you the entire time. And he is so good at that in this movie. And most of this movie, he's not talking. When he starts talking, you can see, yeah, okay, so you're not Heath Ledger. But Heath Ledger first really burst onto the scene in 2005. I know he was kind of big earlier, but that was his first Oscar year, first Oscar nomination. That was the same year William Moseley was introduced in the first Chronicles of Narnia movie. Heath died in 2008. 2008's when William Moseley had a second Chronicles of Narnia movie. So it's just kind of the timeline works out, and yet he's just not really done much in the last decade and a half. And I know some people, you know, it's not necessarily their skill level. They just don't have ambition to be a superstar, and they want to spend time with their family, yada, yada. He's working pretty consistently in a couple movies that I docked on my IMDb watch list. But this is 100% his best film that I've seen, probably ever, including The Chronicles. I like, you know, they're fun when you're a kid, and you look back at them with nostalgia, but this might be his best movie. It's got an 8.7 on IMDb, which is really good for a low-budget movie. Now, half this movie, it was just a visual experience. It was beautifully shot as you see him fighting through the elements and fighting through a few people to get back home with very, very little dialogue, which, again, mostly excels at is that the physical half of acting. Now, there was one scene at the very end, one scene I'm going to complain about and then one that I'm going to justify. In one scene, so the kids escape the bad guy, Davy Crockett's coming home. We don't see Davy for a little bit. We see the kids run away from their house and then boom, they just run splat into Davy. It's very odd and I feel like they cut a small scene there, but that's forgivable. At the end, though, there's a massive, massive fight scene with Davey saving his kids. I don't know if that's a spoiler. And in one specific moment, there's a good old Mexican standoff. Davey whips out an axe, throws it at the bad guy. The bad guy ducks. The bad guy shoots at Davey. Davey ducks out of the way of the bullet, which he had done before in this movie, which is, I don't know if that's realistic. And then Davey shoots at the hatchet that had stuck into the side of a tree. The bullet hits the hatchet, splits perfectly to kill two of the bad guys. Like he's freaking Deadpool in X-Men Origins. When I first saw that, I thought it was dope. My second thought was, that's not very realistic. My third thought was, this was Davy Crockett. That's why they chose to do a Davy Crockett movie, because there's some sort of mysticism with him, right? Some kind of mythology. So you can kind of get away with that. So in the end, just very positive experience in that final fight scene. And overall in this movie, this was a really, really good low-budget movie. And this is what Core Jefferson was talking about at the Oscars. I know I didn't do a post-Oscars podcast, but the Core Jefferson acceptance speech, when he talks about not doing a $200 million movie, but doing several $20 million, a couple $4 million movies, going smaller and smaller scale. This is the movie. This is the kind of movie that Core Jefferson is talking about. So go see it in theaters. It's absolutely worth it. Favorite couple quotes from the movie. Justice does not take sides. This was said by a bad guy who wanted to punish children for stealing to eat, but it's a good line. Justice does not take sides. And then at the end, when William Moseley writes to Andrew Jackson, by the way, I want to comment on Andrew Jackson. I liked how they revealed him, because you can, like, looking back, you can tell, you know, he's got the sideburns, it's Andrew Jackson. But you don't know exactly who he is until he starts reading a declaration he's signing and signs at the end, Andrew Jackson, by saying Andrew Jackson. I like when they slowly reveal stuff. It's not too obvious. But Davey is telling Jackson why he's not going to support his Indian Removal Act. Davey says in a letter, "People who put profit and nation building above humanity make one wonder, who are the real savages?" It's a dope line. There aren't a lot of dumb reviews, just because this is a B movie and people, I don't know, you're going to kick a B movie? I don't know. Most of the reviews talk about how this is a good B flick. There's a couple things, it's, you know, made for TV production styles, which nowadays is as good as some movies 15, 20 years ago. Inconsistent accents, especially William Moseley should never do a Southern accent again. Sorry, bud. I like you a lot and hope you do more things in the future. The kids were terrible kid actors, but what are you going to do? But most of the reviews are absolutely fair, so no complaints among reviews. I would recommend this to absolutely everybody who possibly can see it. Short, easy to consume, probably not at a lot of theaters, so hard to actually get. I think it's available to rent, maybe even buy on... Yeah, okay, it's available on Amazon Prime right now for $5. Go watch it. Second movie. Probably more of you guys have seen this one. Dune Part 2. I missed the Dune wave. I don't know how. I'm into a lot of sci-fi stuff. I don't necessarily love it, but I like Star Wars. I like, have a particular passion for a few of the movies, but I just never got into Dune. I don't know why. So I had to watch the first one before going to the second one. It's absolutely amazing. I, for the most part, like dialogue-driven movies that are more poetic than anything. You know, like Past Lives, I absolutely loved. Whiplash, where it's about the dialogue and things happen, there's visual aspects, but the crux is the dialogue, the crux is the screenplay. Dune is not that. Somehow the first one got nominated for a screenplay. That's more storytelling than actual dialogue, and even that was lacking, because these movies, they drag out. They're 5.5 hours together, and they were like a 2-hour movie 40 years ago, so that's just funny. But it's absolutely worth it, because it's about the shots, it's about the sound, it's about the technical aspects. The first one won, obviously, a bunch of technical Oscars, and thank God that this released in 2024, because if it released last year, it would have been competing with Oppenheimer for a lot of technical Oscars, and I think it would have lost a lot of Oscars. This year, it's probably going to win visual effects, sound. The sound is amazing. You can feel it in your bones. The silent. I'm a sucker for silence. There's a scene in Beekeeper where everything goes silent. You can't hear anything at all, any outside noise, except for the sing of him fighting the South African guy, which I didn't do a review on that movie, but I loved that South African guy. The Harkonnens are disgusting. Stellan Skarsgård is so good at just being this vile, disgusting worm of a human. Dave Bautista is great at being this just idiot. He's so stupid. He's so good at playing stupid. And it works really well. And just screams at his men just randomly. And he does the little mouth agape constantly thing that stupid people do. I love it. And then Austin Butler. I don't love Austin Butler. I think he's a little... there's no subtlety, you know? Like, he knows what he's doing. And it seems like as he's acting, he knows he's the best actor on the planet, which he's not. And I don't know. There's no subtlety. It was still a good role. And that worked here because he's this psychotic freak. I think Javier Bardem is my favorite right now, just of movies that have released so far for a supporting actor. I love how he, just anytime anything happens, Paul, Timothy Chalamet is like, oh, I'm not Jesus. Zendaya's, he's not Jesus. Javier Bardem's like, it is Jesus. I know it's not Jesus. I don't remember what they call it. It's like the Messiah of the Fremen. Christopher Walken. Let's talk about Christopher Walken for a second. What were you doing in this movie? He was not in the same movie. It's like, I saw somebody tweet that it was someone who's not invested in doing an SNL skit. And that was so spot on. I know he's getting a little bit older, but he legitimately seemed like he didn't know what was going on, didn't know what movie he was in. And it just, that could have been a great role, but a role that probably could have gotten maybe a supporting actor nomination. Florence Pugh, I'm hoping to see more of her in the second or in the third movie, which I think has been announced accidentally by Christopher Nolan. Cause she was kind of, cut off at the heels here, just not doing that much. Timothy Chalamet though, this was his best role, I think, outside of like Call Me By Your Name. That's a completely different skill. That's he's doing something different than he's doing in this, but he's eating up the screen same as William Mosley's doing in this movie. He really shows it off, and when he finally shows passion, this movie, he shows passion in the first one a little bit, and I think it's lacking. And this one, it hurts, you know, specifically rage. I'm talking about passion. And the kissing scene, the first kiss between him and Zendaya, could not have been done better. Her eyes flickering down on his lips. It's very YA novel, if I try to explain how it looked. But super romantic, super well done, and just top to bottom, beautiful. And there was one more role that was really good, but I'm going to spoil if I say who it was. So no comment there. Rebecca Ferguson, I've heard people complimenting her on this movie. You know what? She was fine. She was intimidating, scary. She's a good actress. I hate the... like whisper talking in movies, like it makes it more dramatic. Like everything she says is whispered. Like someone would be like, hey, what's going on with Paul? And she'd be like, he's so fucking like, how is that? That's not cool, you know? It's just not realistic. It's not. I despise that trope in movies. A couple of worst reviews. These come from, I've had friends specifically call this movie boring. I've heard other people saying the plot is underdeveloped, characters underdeveloped. This is not that type of movie. Plot, couldn't care less about this movie. Dialogue, couldn't care less. This movie is a technical achievement. It's visual, the sound, it's an art form. Every single frame of this movie is an art form. And there is no wasted sound. That is the most beautiful thing about this movie. No wasted noise at all. So if you're comparing this movie to even Oppenheimer, which was a visual movie, or just any other, it's not an action movie, it's not a dialogue-driven movie, it's a visual treat, it's an art movie. And you just have to grade it as such. And this movie belongs to IMAX. I still haven't seen an IMAX, but that's where this movie belongs. And based on, I know I'm going to pronounce the name wrong, it's not Denis Villeneuve. Villeneuve? It's French-Canadian. I am not French-Canadian. Based on his comments a few weeks ago about how he would just want a movie with zero dialogue if he could, that just made sense timing-wise. The dialogue wasn't bad. The script wasn't bad. Screenplay wasn't bad. You don't necessarily feel for the characters as much as you do in other movies. Even Paul, the main character we're spending the most time with, you don't necessarily feel for him at any point. But it's art. You don't need to. Yeah. Again, this is not a character-driven movie. Best quote... Fear is the Mind Killer is an absolute banger. Fear is the Mind Killer. Of course, it was whispered 20 times. I think my favorite... Okay, a couple good lines. There's Paul's kind of coming of age, his ascension, where he says, "I am Paul Makdib Atreus, Duke of Arrakis. The hand of God be my witness. I am the voice from the outer world. I will lead you to paradise." That was kind of a cool line. My favorite line, though, was Javier Bardem, Stilgar. I explained this kind of without saying the quote earlier, but when Paul says he is not the Madai, he does cool things, but he's not the Madai. Stilgar says, "The Madai is too humble to say he's the Madai. Even more reason to know who he is, as written." That was the funniest line of the movie. I laughed out loud in a movie where I rarely did. I would recommend this movie to anybody who has eyeballs and ears. If you don't have one of the two, really, if you even just have one, if you have one of those two requirements, you should see this movie. But this movie should be seen by as many eyeballs as humanly possible, and I will be happy. This is why movie theaters exist. If you hate my wrong opinions, tweet me at WOPresents. We're going to be back next week. I know that I'm going to be talking about Love Lies Bleeding, and might get a couple more in there. Maybe Arthur the King, maybe a little action there. We're getting to the point where there are fewer movies that I'm super excited for coming out right now. But a few weeks away, about a month away from a couple bangers that I was really anticipating. Civil War is coming out soon. It's been defined as an artisan film, which is really interesting, and I'm excited to see what that, how that relates. Outside of that, right now out, you got like Arthur the King and Cabrini. But coming soon outside of Civil War, Ghostbusters, fine. Godzilla vs. Kong, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes coming out soon. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Except for that next month. Actually, a couple weeks in a row, a lot of good movies coming out. Challengers, pushed out back from last year. Huge Complaint to Send to the World. Nicole Kidman's opener to the AMC, you know, her intro. They changed it just a little bit. Absolutely hate it. Everybody complain. So catch you next week for the next movies. We're going to be doing Quantumania soon with Ricky. But until then, peace out.